Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Today we had a little bit of another pullback in gold, down 740 at 1,094. We have silver down 6 at 1,489. Platinum was down 3 at 981. Palladium is holding at 630. You have the USDX stronger 0.25 at 97.54. Beating on crude oil down 1.79 at 49.07. And some pressure on the paper markets today. And we'll bring those right up here. You have the Dow down 90 points. Came off, they reversed it, 68 points, 17,850. The NASDAQ was down 36, 51.71. The S&P down 5 at 21.14. 10-year yield, 2.32. Euro, 109, down 0.20. And all the European and Asian markets were down overnight also. We'll talk a little bit more of, are we at a bottom with gold? And we have Wendy Wilson joining us this afternoon from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melanie. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
Hey, I owe everybody an apology for last week. You know, it was my fault. It wasn't the producer's fault. I had a surge.
It doesn't matter whose fault it really is. We always blame the producer. That's part of Frank's job description. He understands that.
No.
I blame the producer, so that's not a problem.
Oh, dear. Well, I do apologize for missing everybody last week. And, today we're going to talk about brain size, because we're very familiar with that old saying that we only use 10% of our brain capacity, right? Well, maybe last week that was true for me, okay, because I forgot to do the show. But where did that get started? You know, we only use 10% of our brains. Al, do you know where that got started?
I have no idea, but it's always struck me as a bizarre concept, because it's like saying you only use 10% of the muscle in your arm or in your leg. Everything I know about how the body functions indicates that it tends to be efficient. And if you're not using something, it atrophies. You don't need that. If we're only using, our heads should be, you know, 3/4 smaller than what they are if we only use 10% of our brain. What's the other 90% there for?
Absolutely. Good point. I agree with you. At the risk of sounding like Spock, it doesn't seem logical, right? And, our creator is not the author of confusion. So we're going to take a look at how much of our brains we really do use. So we don't think about breathing, blinking our eyes, or swallowing unless we really want to, because lots of these functions are automatic. So how much space does the brain need to perform all those functions? And we don't really give any of these functions a second thought. And I would think that the brain would use at least 10% of its capacity just to carry out those functions, now, let alone the area of the brain that covers instinct and consciousness. All these large, I just think the brain largely remains a mystery to medical science. But scientific research, though, has been coming along. For decades, they've speculated that if man could use the unused portions of his brain, that maybe he could do infinite math problems in his head faster than a computer, or maybe he could manifest maybe telekinetic powers and read other people's minds. But I think the privacy of our own thoughts is protected by divine providence, so the policing of our thoughts is for God alone. That's just my take on that. But where did this mega myth get started? Well, and more importantly, how come people believed it? Really? Well, according to Dr. Barry Gordon, he's a neurologist at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine in Baltimore. He says that the myth really took root because people tend to be concerned with their own shortcomings. And he said, who wouldn't like to think that if they could activate the rest of their unused brain, they could actually rattle off the numbers of pi or learn a new language in just a few minutes? But Dr. Gordon did report that there is really no one person to blame for the myth. However, he did allude to some interesting candidates, such as the author William James, who wrote that humans use only a small part of the brains, and also Albert Einstein. He alluded to him, who may have made a comparison to highlight his own intellect. However, Dr. Gordon does state this, that the myth may also allude to what the brain powers down when we are at resting state, and at which time we're not using all of our brain at that time. But most of the time when we're awake and the lights are on, he says we're using almost the entire brain's capacity. He says, put another way, the brain represents 3% of the body's weight and uses 20% of the body's energy. So there's a good, idea there.
Absolutely. It's part of the, it's one of the most, it's a heat dissipating phenomena. I mean, you need to wear a hat and hope you don't go bald and the rest of that sort of thing, in part just to retain body heat. If you're in cold weather, you better keep your head covered because it dissipates a disproportionate amount of heat.
And yeah, exactly. My mom always told me in wintertime, put a hat on, all your body heat's going out top of your head.
Yeah.
That's right.
I understand.
Well, scientific medicine really has been studying the brain's function through a lot of imaging studies like MRIs. And what they think they've learned is that depending on the stimulus to the brain, there are certain sections of the brain that tend to fire up, and neurons light up the brain, generate some electrical heat up there, and then sections of the study of the brain section light up. So doctors believe that our brains are actually working 100% most of the time. And according to neurologist John Henley of the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, even during our sleep time, we are thinking, he says, we have self-awareness, which in which several areas of the brain are still working. So we're really not shut off. We're not brain dead when we go to sleep, apparently. So now there is this thing called intracranial vacancy, and that represents injury or trauma or even a birth defect to the brain itself, where you may have sections of the brain missing or having to be removed. So this doesn't mean that the person's brain dead. According to Dr. Henley, it just means these people actually can live out normal lives due to the complexity the brain's able to compensate. So brain surgeons will purposely avoid sections of the brain that have what they call brain clusters to preserve as many functions of the brain. The brain clusters house functions like vision, hearing, and coordination and movement. So real
is
good
stuff.
Is
there any redundancy? Have they found any redundancy in the brain in the sense that you have sections that deal with certain kinds of stimulus? We know that section A deals with certain stimulus. Is there a
yes.
section B that can pick up the load if section A isn't functioning or it's overloaded or
right.
whatever? Do we have redundancy in the brain?
Well, we don't have redundancy, but the brain's able to compensate for areas that are not functioning at capacity. In other words, it's almost like they can build new pathways. And so if, let's say, one section, the right side of the hemisphere, has been traumatized or injured, the left side will demonstrate the ability to compensate for those missing functions. So it's almost like it grows new brain clusters on the left side to handle what's missing on the right. It's interesting stuff.
What about Alzheimer's?
Well, there's
we know
a lot
that
of
the brain can degrade over time. Something happens there. Can we reroute and compensate for whatever effects, or is Alzheimer's across the entire brain, or does it focus on just certain segments? Do you know?
From what they can tell, Alzheimer's does start in one area of the brain, not specifically to everybody. It does start somewhere and then goes out from there. They do know that also it is reversible. So it tends to be, in a lot of people's opinion, in neuroscience, in biochemistry, and just regular naturopath out there, they do think that it has to be somewhat a nutritional related or toxin related or both. So if you got low nutrition and then you get a lot of aluminum in the system, for instance, if you're taking a lot of vaccines, if you're drinking soda out of a can, that kind of stuff, it adds to the level of aluminum, which tends to affect the brain a lot. For some reason, that blood-brain barrier is not going to be in place when you take a lot of medications. So like your blood thinners and things like that, that barrier gets eroded, and then certain toxins can get in the brain.
What about high concentrations of vitamins?
Well, if you're getting whole food stuff, your body is able to utilize what it needs, because when you get whole food vitamins, it has all the mineral and uptake requirements for the body to use what it needs and then void out what it doesn't. When you're using synthetic versions, then that's just like a petrochemical drug, and therefore you're not going to get fortified. You're probably going to devitalize your system because there's missing elements and the body's going to have to take from the nutritional stores to use it. And in a lot of cases, you could be having side effects just like you would from a drug, because this isn't really a whole food nutrient like it was designed to be. But there's a whole bunch of stuff here. There's a whole bunch of stuff, Al, I want to finish on this brain thing.
Go ahead.
Now, research has discovered that the brain has options. In other words, there's really no clear region of the brain that is assigned to consciousness. I love this part. There's no brain cluster for consciousness, according to research, and it can be wherever there is a collection of neurons. So your consciousness can float in different areas of your brain, according to science, and that's really neat. I think that's just amazing. Now, according to Robin Boyd, journalist for Scientific American, she says, it's really not true that we use just 10% of our brains, merely that we only understand about 10% of how it functions. I like that. That's true. But here comes the good part. We have some brain tidbits for you, Al, Melanie. Science tells us our brain weighs about 3 pounds, and it's made up of 75% water. So the brain's gray matter is an area that contains about 1 billion neurons. The white matter of the brain is where the dendrites and the axons are, and this is the network that carries the neuron signals. So there's about 1,000 to 10,000 synapses per neuron, and everyone is considered a fathead because they say the brain is made of 60% fat. So the brain is the organ of the body that feels no pain because there's no pain receptors there. A lot of people wonder how they can have a headache if there's no pain receptors in their brain. Well, according to science, the pain is from pressure at the skull, muscle, and skin sensation area. It's also pressure from the sinus cavities and the neck muscles that you're feeling. So the pain signals travel on nerves called nanoreceptors from these areas to your brain, and then you sense pain. Now, for this reason, it's how brain surgeons can actually operate on patients while they're awake without causing any pain. So our brains can live about 6 minutes without oxygen before they die, and according to studies involving the New York children who ate lunch that was devoid of artificial ingredients and preservatives, they increased their IQ by 14%. There was also a study in 2003 in the Discover magazine. It reported that if we eat fish once a week, we reduce our risk of dementia and Alzheimer's by 30%. So, and if you wondered why you can't, you know, tickle yourself, because your brain knows the difference between unexpected touching and your touch. And when your ears ring occasionally, you thought that it was your ear tuning up for hearing, but it's actually your brain doing the sound check. And if you fight with your spouse over the thermostat in the wintertime, it's really because one of you feels cold more because of the sensitive channels that send the cold signal to your brain. You have more sensitive channels. And when you laugh...
Are you saying that you're not really colder? One says they're cold, the other one says they're not. The one who says they are colder isn't really colder. They just feel colder. It's kind of an imaginary thing.
No, well, they're just more sensitive to cold. Their channels sense the cold more. It sort of magnifies the cold. Okay, so they sense cold. They have a heightened sensation to cold. Let's put it that way. Now, Al, if you laugh, you got a sense of humor. I know you do. Now, it requires, according to science, that five different areas of your brain have to work together in order for you to have a sense of humor. Boy, does that not explain a lot for people who don't have a sense of humor?
Yeah, seriously. It does. I've seen reports that a sense of humor is one of the hallmarks of intelligence.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing. The average number of thoughts that you're going to experience in a day, Al, is 70,000. 70,000 in one day. That's a lot of thinking.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah, that's what they say. The average
person. I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to get a little counter. I'm going to get one of those little stopwatch deals. I'm just going to click a number every time I have a thought. I'm going to see if I can get to 70,000 in a day.
Yeah, click that off. Well, yeah. And now let's talk about some brain food for your human brain. Your human brain is really made up of nervous system elements. So your nervous system needs natural vitamin B, not synthetic vitamin B. Your brain also needs plenty of water to stay hydrated. So, you know, watch the alcohol. You dehydrate your brain. This is why you get, you know, that, you know, hangover sensation. And the brain also needs a proper circulation and natural cholesterol to work properly. And these people that are on these cholesterol-lowering drugs, this is why they have memory problems. So what the brain doesn't need is really lots of caffeine and lots of alcohol that dehydrate it. It doesn't need prescriptions. It doesn't need over-the-counter meds, and it can be very toxic to the brain because, as I mentioned, that blood-brain barrier tries to protect the brain from toxins and foreign substances, and that barrier can be compromised when we are exposed to radiation, infections, microwaves, trauma, inflammation like encephalitis, which you get from vaccines, drug toxicity or poisons, and also high blood pressure and high blood pressure and cholesterol-lowering medications. So watch those things out there. And the herbs that can help protect your brain, that you can avoid a lot of things, you know, like people talk about ginkgo, Al. You got to have ginkgo paired with a circulatory herb so it gets to the brain area, so you get more oxygen-rich blood to the brain. So make sure if you're taking ginkgo, you have either rosemary or cayenne with it. So if you're looking for that, the folks at Apothecary Herbs do have a brain concentrate formula. They also have a body food mix with all that natural vitamin B for your brain. They have a heart formula if you want to get off those heart and cholesterol meds. So you've got choices out there. They're all natural, and they're going to be kind to the noodle upstairs. What do you think of that?
Well, that's it's another. Now I have 70,001 thoughts for today. I've got another thought to think about here. So,
awesome.
Yeah, I understand. But it is pretty amazing, and it is evidence how little we really understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole idea that you only use 10% of your brain, that's just crazy. It can't be. It cannot be. It may be scientists don't know what you're doing with the other 90% of the brain. Maybe it's playing solitaire or video games while the 10% is working, the other 90. But it's up to something. That 90% has to be up to something. So.
Yeah, but it's really scary because medicine doesn't know as much as they should about the brain, but you know, they could be opening your skull up and operating in there. That's what scares me.
Well, as long as they know how to bill. They may not know what they're doing, but they do know how to bill for the operation and so on. And from medicine's perspective, that's the important part. We have to protect our brain, though. It's certainly one of the more vulnerable organs we have.
Right.
And you have products that can help with that protection. Give people some contact information where they can protect themselves.
Absolutely. They can visit us online at thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com, or they can call toll-free for a free product catalog at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. And thanks for having me, guys. Sorry about last week. We'll talk to you soon.
It's okay. Thank you, Wendy. We'll talk to you next Wednesday, barring the unforeseen. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I do believe we have a caller. Let's go to our caller right away, please.
Is this Joe
yes,
from
hello?
Arkansas?
Yes.
Yes, hello.
What up, Joe? Yep,
yeah,
hello.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I wanted to comment on what Wendy Wilson was talking about, if you take a call on the subject. And that's
go ahead.
Okay. We call a bright person, when somebody is smart, you know, you say they're bright. And when somebody is stupid, you say they're dull. And that's kind of in recognition of that we kind of instinctively or intuitively know that there's a kind of a life force or bioelectricity, you know, that goes through us, vital energy. And so when the brain is more energized by this life force, by this bioelectricity, then the person is brighter. They get more full use of their brain. And when the life force is low, then we call them dull, like a dim light bulb that's not getting much electricity to it. And so what I've found is that I've found myself three particularly effective ways to get more bioelectricity to the brain, so that you do get more full use of the brain, and you kind of wake up areas of your brain that might have been asleep before, and you become more intelligent. And so the first thing I found is that if you're physically active, you know, if you're sedentary, then the energy level in your body just tends to drop down low. And if you're more physically active, then you kind of tend to raise up more energy in your body so that your whole body and your brain are more energized and you become more intelligent. And what's particularly good in the way of physical activity is to stretch your spine every which way, you know, bend and stretch your spine, you know, backwards and forwards and side to side and twist in every direction, you know, like yoga exercises have you do. And that raises up a very strong current of the bioelectricity in your spinal cord, so that then your whole body and brain becomes energized by this energy. And you find that when you do this, your brain tends to wake up. You know, areas of your brain that had been asleep before tend to wake up, and you find yourself kind of remembering knowledge that you had a long time ago, that you had kind of forgotten when your energy got low, but now your energy level is back up, energizing your brain, and you tend to start to remember a lot of things that you knew a long time ago, but that you had kind of forgotten. And so that's one way. And then another way is to live on raw food, because raw food has much more of the life force, much more energy in it than cooked food. And so when you live just on raw food or very close to only on raw food, then your brain becomes more energized. And number three is many people have a lot of energy locked up and repressed emotions stored up as tension in their diaphragm. So if you find ways to release this tension from your diaphragm, release your stored emotions, release your repressed or trapped emotions, then more free energy comes into your brain, and it energizes your brain more, you become more intelligent. So those are the three things that I've found personally most helpful for getting more full use of the brain.
Do you think the bioenergy that you're talking about functions as only a stimulant, in the sense that coffee is a stimulant? We take coffee and it perks us up, all right? Is this bioenergy a stimulant, or do you think that this bioenergy is actually a form of nutrition that the brain needs in order to function in the same sense that it needs oxygen and whatever sugars and proteins or whatever else feed the brain?
Well, it's definitely a form of nutrition. It's like, okay, say a light, you know, the brain is a material organ, same as a light bulb is a material, you know, construct. And so to get some use out of the light bulb, you know, to actually make the light bulb function and be useful as it's intended to be, you know, you can't have just the material light bulb. You have to have the electricity going through it to animate it, to make it burn, to make it shine, to make it brighter, to make it go brighter. And so, you know, you have these rheostatic controls so that you can turn the electricity to the light bulb up and down, and so the light bulb can burn brighter or dimmer. But it's the same. It's the same light bulb with the same, you know, material construction. And it's the same with our bodies and brains. You know, we can have more of the life force going through us, in which case, you know, we can do more work, we feel more energetic, we want to do more, our brain is lit up more, we use more of our brain, we're more intelligent, we have more intuitive knowledge and so on like that. You know, we can reason better, reason more clearly, we get better use out of the equipment that we have. And so this life force that we have, it's kind of like the electrical component of the body. Similar to the way that the electricity going through the light bulb is the electrical component to the light bulb. You know, if you have an electric machine, it does you no good just to have the machine sitting there, just to have the material thing sitting there. You have to have the electricity going through it. And so then, so it's the same with our bodies. You know, we're dead if we don't have the bioelectricity going through us. So if we have more of the bioelectricity going through us, then we have more full and complete use of our body. The body is performing, and the brain too, of course, is performing more at its optimum, rather than, you know, just kind of at low horsepower level.
If this is a form of nutrition and not just a stimulant, does it follow that the brain atrophies if you don't get enough of this bioenergy for a period of time. The brain actually atrophies down because it's not getting enough nutrition, and then it doesn't need. Not only it doesn't matter once it atrophies, once some sections of it essentially die off, although they may be still alive, but I'm using that metaphorically. When they cease functioning for lack of, do they make a recovery? Can you make a recovery once you've lost enough bioenergy?
I tend to feel like unless there's some physical damage, you know, the brain doesn't die, but it definitely can it definitely parts of it can go to sleep, you know, like oh, say you've got some kind of maybe you could compare it to a computer that can perform, you know, a thousand functions maybe, but if the electricity level of going through the computer is low, maybe it's going to only perform 100 of those functions. You know, you have to have full current going through it to perform 1,000 functions. And the same with our body and brain. You know, if our energy level is low, we can exist. We can exist in a kind of a duller state, you know, but we won't be performing to our optimum. You know, like when we're sick, for instance, we feel low energy and we're alive, but we're not able to do all the things that we can do and think as intelligently and clearly and so on like that as we can when we're fully alive and healthy. And so the parts of the brain can go dormant, can kind of go to sleep. But then the more you can re-energize yourself, the more you can get your life force back up to optimum level, the more your brain is fully energized, the more full use of you get of your brain. And the more parts of the brain that had gone to sleep are reawakened.
Do you think public school education puts young people's brains, does it make them more alert, or does it put them to sleep?
Well, somebody said, and I think it was a good observation on public education, that the main thing you learn in public school is to sit down and shut up, and sit still and be quiet. And so,
I understand.
Yeah, I think that definitely
How is that conducive?
I think that definitely tends to make your brain go to sleep, yeah.
Yeah.
Dumb you down, some people say.
I'll tell you a story that this goes back at least 20, maybe 30 years. I don't remember when I first saw this, but it goes back a couple of decades. And they did an experiment where they had a room, small room, that was just over-insulated to where they could put a machine in the room and they could calculate exactly how much heat that machine was generating. All right, because there was no other source. They knew exactly how much energy was in the room. They put the machine in there. It could be a radio, a television, a washing machine, whatever. They put it in, and it would increase the amount of thermal energy in the room, and the room was so highly insulated that they could accurately decide whether this machine was efficient or inefficient. All right. They did an experiment where they put a man in the room, just set him on a chair and leave him there, and just nothing to look at, blank walls. And then they calculated the thermal energy, and they came up with a particular reading. And then they put him in the room with a television. He could watch TV. And after they calculated how much energy, they knew how much energy was being generated by the television and dissipated into the room, they discovered that the man actually he generated less energy watching TV. He generated less heat watching TV than he did when he was there all by himself on the chair. And the reason was... Go ahead, guess.
Yeah, let me guess. That was not reported on the television news.
No, we didn't get it on the... I picked it up in print someplace, and I don't recall where. Why do you think the explanation is?
Well, I guess the explanation is that TV is designed to... kind of dumb us down, you know. TV is designed to make us more passive, as they say. You know, we're just to sit there
kind
and watch what somebody else is doing rather than being active and doing anything ourselves.
Here's what the explanation was. When the man was sitting there on the chair all by himself, wasn't moving, wasn't doing anything, just staring at the blank wall, he was actually thinking, right?
Uh-huh.
He was thinking about something. He might have been thinking about his girlfriend or his next exam, physics exam. He was thinking and therefore generating more energy than if he sat there in the same chair just staring at the television set. He didn't have to think while he was staring at the TV, and so he generated less energy. That's always stuck in my mind as, oh, my God, the TV puts you in a state where you don't think. How bizarre. So I don't know if that rings your – yeah, it rang mine.
Personally, I think TV is one of the main reasons for the degeneration of America, that, you know, after World War II, when TV came out, you know, people started spending more and more of their time watching TV and became less intelligent, and that's why the I think that's one of the big reasons why the country has degenerated so much politically, you know, since the 1950s, you know, after TV came out, is because, you know, people are just, in general, duller than they used to be because, yep. you know, they used to spend more time doing something active. You know, I think reading is a more active thing. Listening to radio is a more active thing. Of course, there's all kinds of hobbies that people used to engage in, I believe, that maybe they would spend their time watching TV instead of doing their hobby that would make them more active, mentally active and alert and so on like that. So yeah. That's very interesting. It kind of confirms what all kinds of smart people intuitively feel and know about TV, that TV is a very bad influence.
It's especially, you know, if you're right about the bioenergy and the bioelectrical whatever going through, it indicates the TV, if you're not thinking, you're not using as much energy, to the extent that it's a nutrition rather than merely a supplement, a stimulant, it points to the possibility that the brain tends to atrophy. You watch enough TV and your IQ is going to drop. You know, with, I think Marshall McLuhan, you may recognize, you know the name Marshall McLuhan?
Yeah, I never read his book, but I've heard his name over and over.
He had a number of books. He dealt with media and whatever. He called Media Was the Message, was a phrase that he coined back in the 1960s. What was my point? I don't know. Now I've introduced him. Now I can't remember. See,
do a couple of exercises, Al.
Yeah, I know. That's what I need to do. I need
Touch
to do some
toes.
Exercises and run the calendar back a couple of years or maybe a couple of decades and so on. Sometimes you have these senior moments where you kind of have a brownout. Trying to think, and it's just not coming to me. It was there for a moment. Well, we'll talk about Marshall McLuhan another time. Anything more that you'd like to ask or add about the bioelectrical field? Energy.
Yeah. The more you can raise up the bioelectricity to get more optimum use of your body and brain, you know, the more I find that you regenerate yourself. Personally, I feel that the thing that's most behind, you know, all the political and economic problems and everything that we talk about, I think the basic underlying cause of them is that people in general have tended to degenerate rather than evolve and become better. You know, I think the theory of evolution basically is backwards, that instead of evolving and becoming better, for the most part, people have devolved or degenerated, become worse. And so I think what all the horrible political and economic problems that we have in the world today, I think what it basically shows is that humanity is in a very low state of degeneration or devolvement rather than in some very high, wonderful state of evolution. And that the main thing that's needed, you know, the root cause of the problem needs to be dealt with, that people need to regenerate themselves more and more back towards optimum condition. And as that could be done, you know, the more people could do that, the more regeneration of humanity we can have, biospiritually, I like to call it, the more the virtue and the intelligence to solve our problems and to run political and economic systems right so that everybody benefits will be restored.
I agree that there's been a certain amount of de-evolution going on. We have tended to degenerate on average over the past centuries, a few centuries at least. But I think the reason for that is civilization has put natural selection in a state of suspension, at least for a while. Life is easier today. There was a time 100 years ago, 200 years ago, where really only the strong and the smart could survive. And if you were dumb, you weren't likely to last for long. Nowadays, we can have children who are idiots, and we can afford them. And they are not removed from the gene pool by natural selection. They go out and have more idiots. And we will reach a point, in my opinion, where we have enough we have enough idiots, especially in Congress, or finally the whole thing degenerates, and we will have a kind of mass extinction event where the idiots will be separated. Natural selection will reassert itself, and we'll see a whole bunch of idiots removed from the population because they're too dumb to understand what's going on. And then we'll see, you know, an overall, it won't be that we get smarter, but there will be, on average, we will be smarter because we have removed many of our morons. Joe, we got to thank you for your call. We will take a break now for some commercial announcements, and Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to talk a little bit about gold in the last 20 minutes of the program before we go on to some other articles. I had an interesting call today. He was a stockbroker for 25 years. I was on a program earlier today, and he called in, and he said that he thinks that we're looking at close to a bottom here around this. He says when you have the big drops like we've seen in gold and silver, he says it usually looks like it's looking to hit a bottom, and he thinks it's forming a bottom. Now, that doesn't mean to say that, you know, gold and silver can actually go lower, but it was interesting to hear someone who's been in the stock market for such a long time give their opinion on what they see about gold and silver, and I think so too. I think you've had that big hit, and I think that's pretty much forming the bottom, at least at this area temporarily, and we'll have to see where gold and silver go from here. An article was released about Russia. I mean, we certainly all know about China and not adding the number of the amount of gold that everyone expected or thought that they had been adding over the years. However, they still added quite a bit, you know, just because they were shy. 20%, I believe, was the number that everybody thought they had you know, they still added quite a bit. But this came out, was reported that Russia continues to buy gold in June, another 25 tons. And there's still interests in gold, and gold is not going to go away. Gold and silver is not going to go away. It's here. It's recognized. There's no boundaries. There's no debt against it. And I'm not going to go into all the fundamentals of gold and silver now, but we can touch on that on other days, and we've touched on it before days. So, but again, it's important, and people have been taking the buying power is there. The demand for gold and silver has been strong, and we'll go over some of those numbers tomorrow when we look at the what the U.S. Mint. Now they have a hold on the silver eagles, but the last time I looked for gold, it was over 101 ounces of gold sold for the month so far. And that's a big number compared to previous months and even last year. So a strong number in gold. So the physical demand is there, but they just got us with the paper trading. But what they ride down, they ride back up too. So they'll be changing those shorts and the longs and take advantage. It's a small market to be manipulated, and they take advantage of it as they do other small markets. So we'll have to see where it all fares out. We talked a lot about Donald Trump yesterday, and we got a question in late into the program. This is from Bob. He says, living in Iowa, we get barraged with the political pitches of every Tom, Dick, and Hillary running for presidency. He knows it's months away, but he wants to know what Al's, and my guess is, best guess is, whom will obtain each party's nomination for 2016. Bob guesses Hillary as the Democratic candidate, with Mallory of Virginia as the VP, and the Republicans will have John Kasich as the top post and Marco Rubio as VP. He says that represents the swing state of Ohio and Florida. Your choices, please. I'll let you go first, Al.
Well, he's making, the man who sent in the email is making some intelligent predictions. When it comes, you know, I don't like to speculate. I don't care to speculate in the stock markets, and I don't care to speculate in the commodities markets and the bond markets. But I do like to speculate in politics, and that means you can get out and run your gambles. All right? Who's going to be the Democrat candidate? Well, if there's any justice in the world, I would say not Hillary. She shouldn't be, but who can say? For the moment, you know, for the moment, we'll watch and see. And as for Republicans, for the moment, I'm going to speculate and gamble. All right? I'm not making an intelligent prediction the way the author of the email is, but, you know, at the moment, I got to give Trump the nod. You know, strange things are happening, and he does, he's the first candidate that comes out and appears to be a populist. And he's also trying, in my opinion, he's trying to be honest. I know he's got problems, and he may not even make it. I mean, his whole candidacy may go up like a skyrocket and come down like a skyrocket. But right this moment, my, you know, I'm sitting back and I'm saying I'm hoping that Trump winds up being the candidate. I'm not going to bet on it, but it's not impossible. And at the moment, who is truly more likely? Who is more likely at the moment? I mean, Trump could establish. Hillary has gone out early in the campaign, and she's tried to create a lead that would be insurmountable and defeat other, you know, potential Democrat candidates by establishing a big lead. She hasn't been particularly successful with that strategy, but to some degree. But Trump is, for the moment, that's working for Trump. He's building a big lead, and he's going to have to do something. He's building a big lead in the polls for now. He's going to have to do something very stupid, and or other political candidates are going to have to do something that is extraordinarily brilliant and presumably honest to catch up with him. I mean, Kasich, all right, well, maybe. But to me, he's just another administrator, another politician. Trump offers something. You know, the media is just can't wait. Mainstream media can't wait to trash Trump. Right? But from my perspective, I look at it and I say, the more the media hates Trump, the more I'm sitting there and saying, you know, if you trust the media, then Trump is a bad guy. If you distrust the mainstream media and they are virulent against Trump, for me, that's evidence that this guy's out to do what's best for the American people rather than what's best for some special interests. It's not proof. You know, I don't intend to worship Donald Trump. He's not the next Messiah. I get that. But it would certainly make for great theater. Trump versus Hillary.
Well, it's a sad
day. I would pay to see that battle. You put that, put them in the cage on mixed martial arts and let the two of them come in there and punch it out.
Well, it's a sad day in America when our presidential elections are termed as theater, you know, to be entertained, but that is a sign of exactly where this country is. It's a sign of these politicians that are running. I think after the first debate, you might see some of those politicians on the lower end of the scale, you know, get a little closer to Trump. I think you'll see things. But I'll tell you what, when you listen to Trump, and you're right, you know, he's not the savior of, you know, this country and everything. But, you know, he'll give it a good shot in certain areas that we need help in, certain areas that need to be changed. And at least he talks the game now. You know, so his truth is just as good as anyone else's, you know. And but he does say some things that no one else says.
Yeah.
And so I think he knows what's going on. I think he knows all the skeletons, and I think he knows how to fight them. I think he knows how to fight the media. He knows how to fight these politicians, because every politician that's running for president has knocked on his door for a handout in the past.
Yep.
And he's not afraid to say so.
Yeah.
And so,
in fact, that may even go to why he's running. I wonder how many times he has received what he regards as reasonable return on investment from the politicians. He's raised money for him. He told us, and I saw him in one speech, he raised $1 million for Barack Obama, if I recall correctly. Maybe he was talking about G.W. Bush, one of them. G.W. Bush, perhaps, that's more likely. Yeah, I'd say that was more likely.
I think so.
All right, $1 million. Did he get a return on investment? It may be part of the reason why he's sitting back, look, these guys, they take your money and they don't deliver what they promise. It might be part of his motives. All right, fine, I'll run for president. I'll show these guys. I'll get a return. I'll get a return on my investment. All right, if I have to get it myself, I'm not going to depend on G.W. or Barack or whoever. That's just speculation.
Personally, when he says he's here to make America great again, I'm not sure that's his motive. And but if it's part of it,
at least he's talking about it. I would like to make America great
again. Absolutely.
And I think most of the people on the street where I live would like to make America great again. And he's the only politician who's talking about it. Yep. And by doing that, even if he can't personally make America great again, he is going to force the rest of the contestants in this presidential primary. He's going to force them. They're going to have to talk about making America great again. And before you know it, some of them may actually deliver. They may say, oh, my God, the people actually want the country great again. He's forcing that focus onto that issue. Make America great again. Can anybody do it? Don't know. But somebody's got to try.
And when you look at all these politicians who gave Obama fast-track authority for these trade agreements, he can wipe them up in a flash. I mean, they don't have a chance. They really don't.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, that's just one issue. And most of them, they've flip-flopped so often, they're no different than any Democrat.
If you were a Republican candidate right now, would you want to be number two in the polls? because Trump is going to look at he's going to look at whoever is number two, and he's the guy Trump is going to focus on and say, look what this guy did. He voted for Fast Track. He voted for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He voted for whatever's going on in Iran or whatever. Mm-hmm. Trump will pull the skeletons out of the closet for whoever his primary threat is. I mean, good God. Right now, you can hope to just barely stay at the back behind the leaders of the pack. Trump will take them off like a sniper. He can say, look what you did. Look what you did. He's going to bring out the truth, and the public is going to hear it. It's got to scare people to be number two or three in the Republican polls and even number one in the Democrat polls. So,
but what will be interesting, and it could be his fall, is who he would choose to be his running mate. I wouldn't have a clue. I mean, I don't know who he would. I mean, he doesn't seem to be close to anyone. I mean, usually you can, see two of them and two of the nominees begin to, get a little friendly and so forth. But I don't. If he picked the wrong one, it could pull him down.
Yeah, sure. If he picks the right one, it could boost him up.
I mean,
that's just the nature of it. That's true. But it is an interesting question. I can't think of a candidate that who would be vice president for Jeb Bush. Who would be with Jeb Bush? Can we point to somebody right now? It's premature to think about that.
Oh, I could. Yeah, it'd be Rubio. It'd be Walker. It'd be maybe one of those guys.
But it would be another suit. It would be another suit. It would be standard
but with
political.
Trump,
but Trump,
he's
there's
not
no
gonna,
telling.
No.
There's no telling who Trump would put in there for vice president. I mean, the next guy behind Trump, he may be a live wire all by himself. It becomes interesting. It's not just another suit. He won't give us another suit. All right? He's going to bring somebody in who's going to surprise people.
Yep.
All right? We don't know
he
that
knows.
For a fact, but that's at least a possibility. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Have we answered the question? I'm not sure if you've specified. For the moment, I'm just looking at the moment. I don't know where it's going to be 14, 15, 16 months from now, however many months it is before we get to the actual.
I said from day one it would be O'Malley for the Democratic Party. Hillary's not going to be president. Someone mentioned that O'Malley is really trying to groom himself for the next presidential election. So, I mean, if Hillary is all the Democrats have,
yep.
That's pathetic.
Yeah, we'll watch and see. I mean,
and there's no way she could stand the debate against.
No. No,
I'd
like to see Trump and Hillary step into the ring together. Oh, that should be fun. That should really be fun. That'll be something to see. Hillary might surprise us. You never know. But I don't think she could withstand the force of the contest. And the same is going to be true for a lot of these politicians. We're going to see the first presidential debate, I believe, is the 6th of next month. I believe it's the 6th of August, and a couple of weeks away. Boy, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, this is going to be make or break time for some of these guys. They're going to bring in the top 10. A couple of people are going to shake things up and move closer to the top. A couple of them are going to say, oh, my God, I just lost the whole campaign. They're going to be gone. I'll bet you we lose three candidates out of the August 6th debate. 3 out of 10, I'll bet they bail. And the debate will have 7. There's others, lower-ranking candidates that'll stay in there. I get that. But I'll bet you the 3 out of 10, they just get wiped out in these debates. We'll see who they are.
Yeah, the first debate, though, it'll wipe out a lot of them because they're not getting the campaign.
Yeah, they need the money.
They need the money. They need the money.
All he needs is oxygen and his jaw muscle keeps functioning. He's good to go. We're good to go. Also, we're going to go until tomorrow. Melody and I will be back. In the meantime, with good Lord, well, thank all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. In the meantime, good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Amen. never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.